5208 Media.
And now, on with the show.
Hey, everyone. What's up? This is Phoenix for this Film Fracas episode.
I was just going to do that.
I have too much
power. I was getting
in
such high energy, and now I just got so...
Do you want me to get the energy back up?
Yeah, I want some energy back up.
Phoenix Arola!
What's up, Film Fracas fans? It's the finale of this season... Of season nine.
Yeah. Season nine of
the Best Picture season.
Nine seasons and a movie.
Yeah. To my right, we've got...
Of course, we were coming to announce from the bonus episode the next one was the movie, but...
Parasite Widener.
Okay. Sure. I like it.
About the movie, not like she's a parasite.
Okay.
Phoenix.
Do we not like
I
Parasite anymore?
Knew,
what
yeah.
happened?
Parasite. Hmm? The Parasites.
Oh, she says something problematic.
They're canceled. Oh. Parasite, Riff. Though. Quite good.
Yeah. Across from me, I've got Carter, Jojo Rabbit, Spilliards.
Oh, these are all nominees. I thought you were just picking Best Picture winners.
Yeah.
But Jojo Rabbit didn't win, so they're just the nominees from this year.
Yeah, from this year.
All right.
And then to my left...
I like Jojo Rabbit.
We've got...
it's a pleasant movie.
Does that cancel
Is it
me?
Pleasant?
Is that movie
ultimately pleasant. I'd say it's ultimately pleasant. Yeah.
Pleasant, problematic,
yeah.
here.
Is it problematic? Well,
I don't think it is, but a lot of people do, so it has to be.
Sure. anyway.
To my left, we've got the Lego Movie, the second part, Robbie DeSantis.
You didn't even choose a movie nominated.
Just
wasn't
that
even nominated.
Was like, well, Lego Movie, had to break the second part.
I muted you. You're in timeout again. This is what happens.
Silenced.
You have been. You're back. You can.
Okay, what's silenced?
Can I get a nickname that
yeah.
is a Best Picture nominee?
Sure. You can be Robbie. Oh my God, the Oscar's so long ago. The Irishman, the Shazer.
Oh.
The one I didn't see.
I can't believe we all forgot.
It's only been, what, 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks?
Since the Oscars? Yeah, like two or three weeks.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Parasite won. The other movies just disappeared.
Everything else
my brain.
Matters, it's fine. Parasite won.
Parasite won.
Yeah. There you go. The Irishman, though. It's good. Yeah. I know
is
you haven't
it?
Seen it.
It
but
is a good movie. You haven't seen it, though.
I could have watched it today.
I don't know, Robbie. I like you more than I like The Irishman. Just saying. Not a big
okay,
fan
Phoenix.
Of The Irishman.
Choose a different
Whoa, fine.
Choose a movie Shannon likes.
Robbie yes. Little Women to Shazer.
Okay, well, yes. I
well,
do
everybody
like
likes Little Women.
You got me.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you're probably an enemy of the state. I don't know.
Yeah, probably.
Enemy of the state. Enemy of this podcast, for sure.
For sure.
And
absolutely.
Of Greta Gerwig.
I thought you were about to go, Robbie, Marriage Story.
As another one you haven't seen.
Yes.
Oh, I like Marriage Story more than Irishman. So if we're going
you were
off
gonna
of
say
Shannon,
more than you like Robbie.
Oh,
you're like,
no.
I like Marriage Story
Robbie,
more than I like you.
You're
but.
Better than the movies.
I
but,
think.
Yeah.
I don't know which one I like more than Irishman or Marriage Story.
Of course
both,
we've
oh,
got.
Oh, I thought you were going to Irishman or Robbie. Like, oh, man. Really gotta
and of course, did you give yourself one? Or your Phoenix 1917 Zarola?
Oh,
oh,
no.
Yes.
That's the one I really tried to forget.
It's a good movie.
That was so shocking, I sneezed.
It's very good at
You could be
one
Phoenix
thing.
Cat-Zarola.
You could be Phoenix the Joker Zarola.
Oh, whoa, whoa.
I was trying
there.
Not to get
the Joker, Joker. It's just Joker, Carter. Get it right. Or get out of this fucking podcast.
No, because you would be. They would introduce you as
the
Joker.
Can you call me Joker?
Hey guys, it's me, Brett.
Hi, Brett.
Because I'm Joaquin Phoenix Arola.
You're the ghost of River Phoenix Arola.
your artificially inseminated cow's Arola.
Oh,
we're yeah.
Still, yeah.
That definitely happened. I do remember that.
I
can
remember
I be,
that.
If we're going to be some like stuff that happened at the Oscars, uh-huh. Can I just be Renee Zellweger's accent?
Okay. I'm going to be Diane Ladd in tears because of how happy she is about Laura Dern.
Okay.
I'm going to be
a wholesome moment.
Janelle Monáe's opening. I'm very
so
happy.
You're just
yeah.
a good opening.
You're retconning all the names I gave you guys and just giving yourselves different.
Well,
no,
I thought we
no.
were I thought we were doing it again.
Oh.
We can have two.
But with different experiences.
Like
yeah.
like it'll be a last
one is
middle
experiential,
name situation.
One is experiential and then one is a movie.
This does okay. feel like we don't want to get to talking about these movies.
I mean,
well It'll be a quick podcast.
We only have three movies left.
We do only have three movies.
Alvin and the Chipmunks, the Squeakquel, and then Alvin and the Chipmunks. Chipwrecked.
Yeah.
Is it Chipwrecked? Is it the road trip?
Is it the road chip?
I didn't see the third one. I've only seen the first one.
Is the fourth one Chipwrecked?
Oh, well, God.
The third one is shit. So we skipped right to Chipwrecked.
Yeah, no. I think
Chipwrecked is the fourth one. I think the road chip is.
I wanted Alvin and the Chipmunks 5, Chip Happens.
Yes, Alvin and the Chipmunks, the road chip.
When did they stop making those movies? When was the last one released?
The last Chipwrecked? I think that was like in 2014, right?
The end of the rodent saga.
Robbie, you're the expert.
Chipwrecked was actually before Road Chip.
So Chipwrecked was number 3. I was right. Yeah. Okay. Hell yeah.
Wow. Road Chip was 2015, 4 years after the one before it.
Yeah.
And it featured Uptown Funk.
Uh-huh. Probably.
Oh, yes.
So which Alvin the Chipmunks movies are we?
I think I'm the Squeakquel.
I've only seen the first one, so I'm going to go with You're the Road Chip. You're the OG Alvin, and okay. I'm Chipwrecked.
And I'm the Squeakquel.
You're the Squeakquel, yes. He already claimed that.
I'm so sad not to be the Squeakquel.
He already claimed it.
I know, but
I will fight you.
I praised
it. Is it a better film, though? Like, what happens in the Squeakquel?
The girl chipmunks are introduced.
Yes.
The Chipettes.
Haven't seen anything but the first one.
Yeah, I've only...
The Chipettes are introduced, and they're good.
I feel like I've seen the second one before at some sort of, like... elementary school.
What I'm hearing is we all need to watch the Alvin and the Chipmunks movies.
I think this is a thing.
It just sounds like
a requirement now.
It sounds like some people have to throw out their picks for season 10 of Film Fracas.
Yeah.
I've got some socks.
I'm picking Alvin and the Chipmunks 1 through 4.
I mean, Phoenix, do you want to fight for the Squeakquel rights?
I mean, of the three I've seen. Because I have seen three of them.
Okay, I currently am the Squeakquel. Are you challenging me at Fracas Mania?
I am seeing you in 3 weeks.
On Fracas Mania.
For the Squeakquel belt.
Robbie's gotten really into wrestling lately.
It's so dumb, but I love it.
It is great. Everyone should like wrestling.
So if he's peppering more like an unusual amount of wrestling references into this episode or future episodes, that's why.
Hey, I'm doing everything I can, Robbie, not to talk about how pissed I am about Bob Chapek. So
we'll talk about that later.
Oh yeah, Disney.
Very upset about that.
Disney.
It was predictable.
Predictable who it was. I'm surprised it happened today.
But yeah, today was kind of out of the blue.
Because Onward just is really that bad.
I've heard it's pretty good. I'm excited.
This is a pro Onward podcast. We want it to be very good.
But
I don't
we're
know if
anti
it's going
Chris Pratt. We're pro Onward, but anti Chris Pratt.
But we're so pro Tom Holland.
We are extremely pro Tom Holland in this house.
Like 100%. Unless, and Octavia Spencer.
Oh, yes.
And Julia Louis Dreyfus.
We're very pro Ma.
Yeah, we are very.
This is a pro
big,
Ma.
It's a big pro Ma household.
Yeah.
We all live in Ma's basement.
Yeah. That's where we record.
Yeah. Everyone waved to Ma.
Uh-huh.
Hi, Ma.
I was waiting for who was going to do the Octavia Spencer.
Did anyone, if only you prepped a Ma soundbite.
Did
on
any
the
of
board.
Us see Ma? Has nope. anyone here seen
I did not
I've not
see
seen
Ma.
It. Yeah, no one has on. Seen it.
I think my favorite.
I think I got it. I got it.
Hey, guys. It's me.
Ma.
I really like the La La Land redid
Mama
Ma poster.
Man.
Yeah.
Mama Man?
I was wonderful. A fan of Mavatar.
Oh, yeah. A good one. A good one. There's so many good ones.
Ma and the Chipmunks, the Squeakquel.
Captain Marvel.
Is it Call Ma by your name or something different?
I liked Mama Mia.
Yeah. Good one, too.
Yeah.
Anyway,
barely a pun.
We're not here to talk about Ma memes.
I hadn't seen Mama Mia.
Oh, they're all they're good. If you go to Octavia Spencer's Instagram page, she has a whole bunch of them.
They're
everywhere. Because she's a huge fan.
Yeah.
Good. Honestly, if something good can come out of your movie that wasn't great.
Yeah.
Run with it and never let it go.
But I love these memes. They're so
we're always
fresh.
Here for the memes.
As they're now known as moms.
Moms? Sure.
They're not memes, they're moms.
Or memos.
I don't like either of those. Can we just call them memes?
Memes?
But you know what Phoenix does like? Oscar-winning films.
Yes, thank
you. Academy Award-winning films for Best Picture.
Academy Award-winning films
for Best Picture.
Sans Green Book.
Best Picture. Yes, with the exception
of Green
Book.
And the only...
Maybe Crash.
Driving Miss Daisy. Crash, probably.
Yeah.
But they're not on the podcast.
There's a few of those. Those aren't it.
Hold on.
We've got three good ones.
Not does, who, what else was nominated against Driving Miss Daisy?
Do the Right Thing.
Do the Right Thing.
It was not nominated. It was the same year, but it was...
But it
snubbed.
Could have been nominated.
Could have been nominated. Yeah. It might have only gotten a screenplay look or nod, if anything. Sad times.
Yeah.
That's another one that I'm like, appreciation has only grown over the years for that. Similar to some other films that Carter and I have talked about
recently.
I would
think appreciation has dropped for Driving Miss Daisy. I hear more people talk about it in a negative connotation.
Oh, for sure. Yes. But Do the Right Thing, I feel
Do the Right Thing.
Oh, yeah, Do the Right Thing has gone.
It might have been hard in the moment to be like, oh, yes, this will be appreciated for years to come and studied.
Who was, which actress was it that, like, in the Oscar presentation, like, paused and told everyone that Do the Right Thing should have won? And it was, like, in the Oscar, like, ceremony, and everyone just cheered, even though they all, like, it was, like, I don't know. It was,
I don't
they
know.
They just called it out. I think it was...
Was it not Rosie Perez?
It was not Rosie Perez.
Hans Zimmer did the score for Driving Miss Daisy.
They're gonna say,
yeah.
I don't know why I was ready for you to say he did the score for Ma.
He might have. I don't know.
He's got to do work. He's got to eat.
Okay, what went up against Driving Miss Daisy? This is a totally different tangent.
It's okay. We got three movies to talk about.
Yeah, but... Let's see, Best Picture. Born on the 4th of July, Dead Poets Society, Field of Dreams, My Left Foot, Driving Miss Daisy. Those are all very white movies.
Yes.
Of those, I would personally pick Dead Poets Society.
Dead Poets Society is good. Field of Dreams,
Field of Dreams
is good.
Is good, too. Oliver Stone won for Born on the 4th of July.
Kim Basinger.
Oh.
She spoke in the... And she was, like, presenting an award, but then before presenting it was like, hey... Do the Right Thing should have won, and let alone be nominated, and everyone just cheered.
Do the Right Thing,
even though
it's
all
kind
the
of
people
a,
there
Do the Right Thing
didn't nominate.
Got,
it?
Got nominated for original for screenplay.
Yeah,
original screenplay.
We can talk about this on the bonus episode, but I hate it when the Academy is like, "Oh yeah, no, this should have been, this should have won." You're like,
"Yeah,
you voted,
you had it in your power."
Greta Gerwig had a like she did it said in an interview or something that. A lot of people at the Oscars were like, oh, I voted for you. You should have won. And told her that so many times that she was like, they said it to me so many times that it couldn't be true because then I would have actually been nominated. So everyone was just lying.
Yeah.
It's the truth.
It's the Knives Out. The, I thought you should have been at the funeral, but I was outvoted.
Like, yeah.
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 But hey, a good solid 13 minutes in. And,
sure. Let's dive right into our movies.
We'll just do one, take a break, then do the last two.
Okay. What do we want to start with?
Birdman.
Birdman. Or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance.
Ooh, which one do we pick?
Or.
I'm going to go
it's
with
just
Or.
Solid Or.
Or was or. Actually the best movie ever made.
It's an underrated Catan resource.
Oh. Sure. Deep cut.
Yes.
What to say about Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance?
Well, we all like it.
Ah! That's what I say about it.
There's a distinct lack of birds in Birdman.
There is a Birdman.
But there is a Birdman.
There is a Birdman, but there are never, we never see any pigeons or
We probably
doves.
See some pigeons.
Okay, we probably see a pigeon or two.
Yeah, they're walking, they're hanging out on the roof in New York.
Broad strokes, what I like about this movie.
Broadway strokes.
The strokes on Broadway.
Never, no.
Broad strokes, what I like about this movie is it's so stream of consciousness, which you don't get a lot of stream of consciousness movies, or at least they're not as executed as well as this one. And I love the kind of like metatextual layers of it's like, the movie itself is like a play, but then there's a play within the play, and then a play within the play within the play kind of thing. And so it's, you know, we as the viewers are in ourselves participating in a play by watching it. But I think it's, I think it executes this kind of interesting, like, commentary on like, media and kind of, like, the entertainment, where it is and where we, like, how we consume media. And then also, like, doing this very kind of interesting, yeah, like stream of consciousness, all kind of anchored by these great performances.
Yeah, for sure.
Like career best for Michael Keaton. But yeah, I mean, broad strokes is what I like about it.
Yeah.
I will say things I like about this movie. It was one of the movies that I watched in high school that made me go, oh, movies can be like really, really good. And it was my favorite from that year. I will say that since then I've seen better movies and I've come to appreciate different movies, but I have not stopped appreciating what I liked about this movie and what drew me to it and what like made me want to go more in depth into film in general. I mean, I feel like, I don't know. It's hard to say that this movie's aged well, but not like, you know, like there's anything problematic about it. I just think that some of the, like, there's a lot of pontificating about the superhero movie bubble and like action movies in general that feels very edgelordy contrarian today that doesn't sit as well with me as it did back in 2015 when, I mean, mind you, I think we just gotten Age of Ultron. Was that our most I'm trying to place this culturally.
I think this would have come out because this came out in 2014, I think, and then one in 2015.
Yeah.
So it would have been before Age of Ultron.
So before Age of Ultron. So we're coming off before the Dark World.
Something like that.
So, but this is also written right after Avengers, I guess. Yeah. This is written and made post-Avengers.
I mean, this movie was made literally in the midst of The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which was also shooting in New York at the same time.
Right, because
also
that's
starring Emma Stone.
Yeah.
So you have all of these layers to it.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of that feels, I mean, we're still having these kind of debates today with Martin Scorsese and all that stuff. At the same time, it feels like the argument that they can't be art or that they shouldn't be appreciated, we're kind of past that point at this. So I don't know. It does feel just weird in 2020 to be examining a film that's talking about this when it feels like the conversation's moved on. Doesn't make it bad, just in my watching, like something that I thought was a very excellent commentary in 2014 when I first saw this movie is kind of tired to me in 2020. Not that that's a fault of the film, mm-hmm. though. That being said, I think the camera work's great. I think this, of the recent films to try this unbroken shot, mm-hmm. quote unquote, or this, you know, whole, the camera is almost a character.
Yeah.
I think this does this very effectively. It felt, and the fact that there are strong performances and a very good story and an excellent score to back this up, make it feel less gimmicky than it can at times,
mm-hmm.
Which is very good. Overall, it's an enjoyable experience. It's one I'm willing to watch over and over again. I feel like I do notice something new every time I see it. But those are, broad strokes, like Carter was talking about.
I really enjoy this movie, and I was surprised at how much I kept enjoyment of it in this rewatch for it. Like, I remember really liking this movie at the time, and I remember even pulling for it in the Oscars. And while looking back, I don't know if I would have pulled for it as more than the other movies. I still remain really in love with the movie and like impressed by all of the factors of it, like the cinematography and the score and the performances and the writing. It definitely is something more close to up my alley in terms of like the writing material. And I'm a big fan of theatrical films, which I know a lot of people might struggle with because, it can be a little slow at times, or it could feel like partial of a film and partial of theater, of seeing live theater. But I just really like the human connection in those movies. And I think this one does that really well. It has a lot of like fleshed out characters. And I think the performances on it are really good. In particular, Edward Norton's character and Michael Keaton's. And I just am really a fan of the score. We talked about it last week, but a big fan of the kind of different, unexpected sort of score that it has. And I even appreciate like the thematic messages of it. While I do agree that it's a little bit dated, I think there's some like consistent themes in it that while like maybe the details have changed, like there's still, I think, a growing like pressure for actors to kind of be more prestigious than be more blockbuster, or there's still like a kind of social pressure from the internet and from how people are perceive you and stuff that has not changed while maybe the like actual like rhetoric around superhero movies has changed. I think a lot of the problems that are discussed and kind of played in and represented in the movie are still pretty strong today. So I'm a big fan of that. And I just really like rewatching this movie. I don't really have many qualms with it. For the most part, I think if I had to like maybe nitpick or come up with like a sort of thing that rubs me the wrong way with it, it's maybe the like kind of, like the set, I guess. I don't really, I think it's at times it can feel a little like played out, or, and also arguably you can argue the Warner is maybe a little bit, the Warner cinematography is maybe a little bit gimmicky, rather than being actually impressive. I'm still impressed by the way they do it, though. I think if you want to look at it from a lens of what it does for like the like narration and the story and the structure, you could say that it doesn't help. So those are maybe my issues with it. I really like it.
Only thing I don't love, like, sorry. I'm very okay on the Warner take. Like,
I love the continuous shot, like the Warners.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me, and I don't know if that's me buying into the gimmick or if I just like, you know, I really do enjoy it. I don't know that I could really, you know, stake a case that it's that this movie can't be told without that specific,
yeah, you know,
cinematographic narrative in place. But I mean, I like it.
Yeah, and I do think it helps in a lot of the case for like. A lot of the story, the A story with Thompson. Okay, I was right.
Yeah, you were right. Don't correct yourself.
I incorrected myself. Regan Thompson. I think it helps a lot with his like erratic nature and stuff. But yeah. I think at times for like the other scenes, it could maybe be a little unnecessary. And I think especially when rewatching it, it can sometimes be a little distracting where you're like finding the cuts and everything that.
From a
take you out.
Yeah, from a technical standpoint, which is what I was really trying to say, is that it does, unfortunately, by nature of what it is, it leads to some where you have to favor like Riggins' performance in a scene as opposed to the people he's acting against. There's not any like glaring examples of somebody like flubbing a line where but there are times where you're like, oh, they probably could, you know, I know the caliber of actor that Edward Norton and Emma Stone are, and they could have done a better reading of that line. But they favor, you know, they have to favor Reagan in this, and like because of the one take nature, and there's not a place to cut, you can't get a better reading of that line. You can't get a better reaction from people, and so, you know, it's a technical thing that like is just the bane of the existence of these one take movies. But like I said, it's a very minor gripe with this.
Yeah, I was gonna say the one take.
But I mean, the Best Picture episode is about minor gripes. They all got to this.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I think for me, the Warners and whatnot. I mean, I kind of agree with you, Robbie, a little bit that yes, because it was also choreographed and staged, and they wouldn't be able to do multiple shots of certain conversations or interactions. So they kind of work with what they had. Thankfully,
it's not that they didn't do multiple takes of stuff. It's the
when they're choosing, they have
you can't always have a take where everyone is perfect.
Exactly. Exactly. Because you're not able to, intercut different takes. So I do think that I don't think that the one take thing is particularly gimmicky. At least in this case, I mean, it can be if it's done poorly. I don't think it's done poorly here. And I think it's done effectively. I mean, there aren't that many movies that do it. There are some movies that were legitimately all shot in one take. I haven't watched them. There's a Russian one.
Yeah.
That it was like literally all done in one take. And then the Woody Harrelson.
Lost
in London was also all one take.
But it was shot live.
It was shot live. Exactly. That's why it's all in one take. Yeah. But I haven't watched it.
And then, I mean, there's like really, you know, Warhol's Empire State Building is
technically, but it's not the same thing. Yeah. But for this, I mean, this, I think, compared to something like 1917, I think this does it better. But I think it is more important to the story and more important to the style and like that kind of like in the head of Regan Thompson, like stream of consciousness thing I was talking about. Because I feel like you wouldn't have that if there were cuts and it wasn't doing. Because it also kind of adds to the chaotic feeling of it, is that it's frantic and there aren't cuts, so you're always kind of like, it's almost dizzying because you're always kind of moving with him. So I would think...
I feel like you could still cut. You could just do a bunch of long takes. Like, you can...
Yeah, I mean, you could probably do something like that. I just think that...
Sorry, that's like a tangent.
I just think going the extra mile to actually put it all together into one take ultimately served the movie more than if it were just cut, like, had multiple cuts and stuff.
Yeah, and now, I mean, I might just be arguing against my own point, because now that I'm thinking it over some more, it also adds to, like, the theater aspect of it.
Exactly.
Of
seeing just, like, you're seeing, constant you're, performance yeah, you're always together. Seeing it.
So maybe it does serve its purpose well.
I think it serves the purpose great for the movie.
Yeah. That theatrical element, for sure, because, like, when you see those moments where it does have to, you know, move down the hallway with someone where it follows Zach Galifianakis, like, down a hallway in order to transition to a new scene or something... I mean, think of that as like a blackout on a stage or like watching like scenery be pulled in. Yeah. Like it's.
So my biggest gripe with the movie is I don't have, I mean, this could just be a personal thing too, is I don't have a particular emotional resonance with it. And it's not that it's like, I can see it on like an intellectual level and being like, oh yes, this is a very good movie and it's interesting and I'm engaged, but I'm not like connecting with it. On any particular emotional level, which, I mean, you're not always going to get that with every movie, but you know, once again, we're coming down to like, you know,
yeah, this is
the, you know,
we have three movies that were all Best Picture winners that have gotten to this round of our,
yeah. So, you know, we're looking at minor
everything
things.
Matters.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, it's like, yeah, I'm not that like emotionally taken with it. Like I'm not caught up in Regan's struggle. Or anyone's particular struggle. It's just interesting to watch. And it is a very like intellectual movie. Like,
it's also a movie that is made for people in the entertainment industry that have been in there for a while.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm not a washed up actor, like
You're not a washed up actor, but you don't know any washed up actors. You aren't even like we're barely in the film criticism journalism world.
I'm not saying that you have to be to resonate. I think there are themes that you can pick up on and see and you know. But I just, for me personally, there wasn't that much like emotional resonance.
Yeah. And I get that that's such a, like, I mean, that kind of thing is like, I understand that it's like obviously a subjective impact because I actually find a lot of like resonance in this, mostly because of the stuff I said earlier, like about how there's a lot of like themes that still kind of in human connection that still kind of like, have not aged at all in terms of like how people respond or how you feel. And how people feel of you and how that affects yourself and your own psyche and your own insecurity and all that stuff that I think you don't have to be an actor or to be in the movie industry to relate to.
Exactly. You don't have to.
Which is, again, not me arguing.
I think it would be almost a worse movie if they couldn't make their themes universal.
Right.
If it was like, oh, you can only feel this if you're a washed up actor, then I'd be like, that's
if you played
Batman.
Bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But that being said, like, there, you know, are other two movies here. I've never been an member of the Italian mob. I've also never been a victim of the Holocaust. And those, I would say, are both much more emotionally resonant.
Yes.
Yeah. I would say they are.
I mean, it's hard to compare washed up actor to the Holocaust, but like.
I mean,
this is what we've chosen
say,
to do today.
You know, so. that Birdman. I still root for Regan. I still, despite the fact and that's not to say that you don't want him to be happy if you're watching the movie or that you're not invested to see.
I was going
to
say,
you know,
I'm still invested in it.
He meets, you know, his end goal or anything like that. But I'm, you know, when I watch the movie, I really care about the dynamic between him and Emma Stone's character and how striated their relationship is and only, you know, starts to come together maybe towards the end. You know, I think that's one of the centerpieces in my own viewing experience of Birdman, just because it's one of the few relationships. I think that gets enough time to be explored and repeatedly explored at least a few more times. And, you know, we're not just taking in information from Reagan's perspective, and we're not only considering, you know, his own thoughts on his career or the people in his life or whatever it may be.
That one, as well as his relationship with his ex-wife, is which doesn't get as much time, but I not feel as is much,
but still very really good.
Is actually one of the more emotionally resonant, like,
parts. Oh yeah, of for the, sure.
That
for
conversation sure. sticks in my mind quite a bit, like,
and just the way that it's framed and everything, and that it's happening, you know, with the glow of the lights falling on him while it's happening. But yeah, I mean, broad strokes for me, Birdman is a movie that originally I wouldn't have wanted to watch multiple times. I was not rooting for it when it came out. And the more I've watched it, the more I've grown to like it, to the point where, you know, if somebody gives me an opportunity to watch it, or if I have the opportunity to watch it, I will seek it out. What I'm really compelled by is actually, the discourse about where we place different types of art. That's always one of my favorite conversations to have. And while I do think that there are a lot of aspects of the superhero, you know, is it art? Is it a theme park thing that's been going on in, you know, also the last decade?
Let's mean to theme parks. Let's
exactly. And theme parks, are they a kind of experiential art? I think so as well. I think there's nothing, you know, it's not... it's not a diss at all to call something a theme park. But aside from that...
That's been my take the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean...
Martin Scorsese's right, because they are theme parks, and theme parks are great, and maybe even better than movies at times.
And I do... but anyway...
can you build a lightsaber in a movie?
That's true.
Not yet.
That's a good point.
But when you can, it'll be a theme park.
For sure. But I love that conversation. I love thinking about that. And I think that, you know, in 20, 30 years, when the superhero mode will, you know, when it's transcended past, you know, this last 10, 12-ish years, and it's fully ingrained as its own genre, apart from science fiction, apart from action, if you subscribe to the genre model, I think that Birdman will be really important to see, you know, how... critics, intellectuals, movie fans, people within the business were really thinking about it at its, you know, still at the very forefront of the inception of this type of story. I really like that. I love the performances. I love Michael Keaton in this movie. I love Emma Stone in this movie. I love Edward Norton in this movie. I do not like Edward Norton and Emma Stone together in this movie. That's my biggest, those are one of my biggest story gripes.
Yeah, with that's true. I forgot about that.
I like both of them separate, and I just go back to the fact that I like some of the conversation that they have when they're together, but the forced romance that goes on, I think, really detracts from the quality of the story itself. And I mean nothing enough to knock it down 2-3 stars out of 5 for me, but enough for me to sit back and be like, this was enough of a problem for me to at least cringe repeatedly when I do watch it happen. But other than that, I like the... Warner, we've already had our discussion about that. I love the way it's shot. I love the lighting in this film. Some of my favorite frames are when, you know, Reagan is going to, I think when he's buying booze, and you see the massive, you know, crazy beautiful look of the multicolored lights that are completely, you know, surrounding him. Mm-hmm. I love the role of the critic. I always love a good critic-artist debate. You know, this movie packages up some of my favorite elements together in a really unique way. And that's why it's here, but I really like it a lot. It's got some sizable elements that make me, mainly, you know, from an acting perspective and from shoving characters that, you know, probably in my mind don't need to be together, perspective, but on the whole, I quite enjoy it and I really like it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you brought up that point, 'cause I also had forgotten about the romances in the movie kind of being not only just distracting from the rest of the movie, but also just the general lack of chemistry and the lack of really necessity for it. So I'm with you on that.
And the way that this movie approaches love, whether it's love of the people in your life or the love of your craft, or, you know, falling out of love with yourself or what you've been able to do. I think that's a really nuanced conversation that they're, you know, pairing together, kind of takes away from cheapens a little bit.
I mean, it's all, you know, about what we talk about when we talk about love.
Wow.
Whoa, man.
Yeah. That being said, does anyone have anything else really to add to the conversation about Birdman?
I wanted to quickly bring up, just because, I mean, just with the structure of this podcast, sometimes there's things that we yet to bring up, but I wanted to see how y'all felt about the ending, because it's pretty ambiguous and, you know, polarizing, I think, for a lot of people, that it doesn't end with such a regular ending, or something that some people find it confusing. Yeah. I wanted to say how it resonated with y'all, and if y'all that's something y'all like about it or dislike about it.
I'm a huge fan of it.
I like the ending. I'm a big fan of him. I can't be as big of a fan of Twin Peaks as I am without
Twin Peaks in particular. Kind of broke me on ambiguous endings. I thought I was against them, and then I saw that, and I was surefire against it, and then
there are much more ambiguous Lynchian endings.
And I realized that it was brilliant and amazing, and that ambiguous endings are the way to go.
Why does Laura laugh at the end of Fire Walk with Me?
It's a whole thing. I like the ending. I think it's good.
I'm a fan of it too. Yeah. I think it's open to interpretation to how you both relate to the material and also understand and interpret the character of Regan Thompson. And I think that in itself could be such a subjective way of thinking, or such a different way of thinking between person to person and how you feel about them about it, that I think ending it ambiguously and with sort of leaving you thinking about what happens is a good idea, because I think that kind of interpretation could be different and both incredibly resonating depending on who you are. So yeah. I'm a fan of it.
I'd say Emma Stone's a fan of.
Yeah, I would say she's probably. I mean,
Emma Stone's a fan of artsy endings. Some of her more prestigious work in the last few years have had some either bittersweet back and forth endings or some very odd endings.
I know you're talking about Zombieland 2 Double Tap, and I agree with you.
Easy A. Yeah. Yes, ambiguous. Very ambiguous ending.
Super bad was what I had in mind.
Yes. But
Crazy Stupid Love is what I had in mind.
Oh, yeah.
That
wonderful.
That ending throws me for a loop.
And next week in Emma Stone season?
We'll find out.
A whole season in 1 week, Phoenix?
I don't know. It's
yes.
I do like the ending.
It's good. Yeah.
My whole thing was, and I was just kind of thinking about it, I'm like, do I really like this ending? I'm like, okay, in my mind, you know, rapidly trying to swap in what would my alternative be? Would it be, CGI'd, green screened Birdman reversing his trajectory and just, going up into the sky and nothing happening? Watching him face plant and being carted away off the pavement, and we pull up onto a sunrise and a drunken guy doing something. It's like none of those are quite as satisfying, I think. While I guess you could argue that it's kind of an easy, maybe it's the
cop out
ending. Yes,
maybe it's Maybelline.
That's what I'm saying. A lot of people don't like it.
I don't think it's a cop out
Exactly, because what do you put in its place that's as satisfying?
I don't think it's supposed to have, it's not, the whole point is that they don't tell you.
Or Regan can just dissolve.
I think if they told you, it would be lessened.
Yeah.
I think so as well, and for that reason, I like it.
Because, it would be, I think if you're not going to end it ambiguously, you could show him, rising above, flying again, but we've already seen that. And so I think the only appropriate ending would just be to see him dead, which just feels like then that whole section in the hospital's pointless
because he's,
we would have just watched him survive suicide one time.
Exactly. Yeah. So, it makes good sense it's ended already. And
quote the Mummy,
it.
Death is only the beginning. So
you're right.
All right. Well, that was all my thoughts on it.
So that about wraps up Birdman for us.
We got two more movies.
Two more movies, but before that,
we're gonna take a break.
Quick break.
Quick break.
Yeah.
Real quick break.
Real quick.
Real quick.
Super quick break.
Super quick break. The quickest break ever.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. Before we get back into the action, I just wanted to tell you about a show we have here on the 52.8 Media Network called Tapheads. That's right. Tapheads is a show hosted by yours truly, Robbie DeShazer, along with Carter Spilliards from Film Fracas and our good friend Wendy Lopez. We get together every other week and we drink a whole bunch of beers and talk about what we like about them, what we don't like about them, what we're learning about beers. There's just so much fun to be had. We've tried a whole bunch of different breweries, a whole bunch of different types of styles of beers. We're just having a lot of fun doing this, and I think that you guys should go check it out. So right after you listen to the second half of this episode, head on over to anchor.fm/tapheads and go listen to our most recent episode. We had a lot of fun making it, and we hope you guys have a lot of fun listening to it. All right, get back to the action.
And we're back. Welcome back from the break. That's right. We said it was a quick break, and I literally took less than a second. You guys cannot escape. Death is only the beginning.
None of us needed to
refill
our waters or do anything.
No, I'm looking at your water. Your water's pretty fucking
my
full.
My water is fine. Man. I didn't know if other people needed to.
I don't have a drink.
That's true.
I don't have a drink. I want to get out of here. We have to record two bonus episodes
that's true.
After this.
You're right.
Makes a lot of sense. Next movie.
So let's talk, I guess, dive into...
There's shock. There was shock and awe.
Let's talk about The Godfather, because I don't have that much to say about this.
Carter's like, I hate it. It's a bad movie.
No, here's the thing about Godfather. It is, I think, a near-perfect film.
I was going to say, yeah. It's a near-perfect. Okay.
You scared me. I was like, what are you going to say?
It's I really only have praises to sing for it. I don't think I have a legitimate gripe. Trying to rack my brain.
I mean
the performances, the writing, the cinematography, the music, the everything, how it all comes together. The direction, the everything. It's all incredible. And I think maybe one of the, if not the greatest movie ever made. It's up there. I put it in the top 10. But I just adore this movie.
Its jersey should be hung in the rafters. We should never get a Godfather remake or reboot or anything. I don't think we should.
I'm not against the idea of rebooting and remaking movies, because I think there's always room to tell more from a particular story. As long as it's like a different perspective, then it's fine. If Francis Ford Coppola was like, I'm going to remake The Godfather and bring back every remaining living cast member and we're going to de-age them, I would be less into that. But if some new creative is like, I have a new take on this, but I want to use this, like, this family and this
good
particular
luck.
Story.
Big shoes to fill,
like,
bro.
Yeah, I'm like, it's go for it if you want, but, you know.
I mean, yeah, I'm not saying I'm inherently against the idea, but also, like, leave perfect stuff alone.
Yeah, I'm
like,
pretty against it. I don't want it to happen.
I'm not going to say never make something. Like,
yeah.
If, you know.
I was going to say, I'm not against any remake.
100% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah, movies are all, I mean,
very long and very hard about who you're hiring, how much money you have, and the quality of story that you're, you know, reasonably
and
going to
don't
be
put
able to
too
get
much
out of
money
it.
Into it. Yeah. Don't.
It's true. But exactly.
There's only like 7 stories, so.
Gotcha. Yeah, I disagree. I've always disagreed with that, but.
But you can, I mean, the proof of this, though, is that, you know, the 3 movies we got have had the elements of them taken and remixed and emulated in so many different films that, like, it clearly can
be. I think The Godfather the most has had the most kind of people draw on it for other things or parody it or, like, put it in other stuff.
Oh, yeah, I would say other than Star Wars, maybe,
Oh, I just talking about the movie you're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
Out of our three remaining movies,
I think it's the most.
I don't know. Schindler's List has been parodied to death at this point.
Yeah?
Yep. Did you see Jojo? Yes.
Oh, no.
No, take. But like I said, I think it just kind of is it's a culmination of so many good things. I don't really have a problem with any of it.
Yeah. All my jokes aside, this is... when I think of a beautiful movie, even though it's not the most gorgeously shot or the prettiest colors, this is what I think of as being just a work of art, like taking it in the macro sense, all of the elements come together to paint a portrait that is beautiful. And every, you know, every frame of this is a joy to watch in a certain sense as consuming art. They do make you feel feelings other than joy.
Mm-hmm. But sure.
This is, you know, it's an experience I go back to. I try to go back to at least once a year, which, I mean, might show my bias towards this movie, but I think it's fantastic. I think all of the performances are on point. There's nothing that, like, I'm sure there are some weaker performances when you think about it. I can't think of the lounge singer's name. Like, he's not. We've already talked about that in the performances episode, but, like,
I like the lounge singer because he's actually a lounge singer.
he's fine.
He doesn't do.
But once
he's also in like 30 seconds.
When you talk about your weakest performance being a bit part character that serves, you know, less than 5 minutes of screen time and something that is fully populated by a career defining performance from Al Pacino and another, you know, an era defining performance from Marlon Brando. Like, there's stuff in there that, I mean, I can forgive a lot more sins than there are in this movie with what we get there. You know, this movie has a lot more room to fuck up just based on the things that are done at the top of its game. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic movie.
Yeah. The Godfather's great.
But also The Godfather's bad.
But Phoenix is it bad, actually?
Well, Phoenix likes the second Godfather more.
I had two gripes. And
I actually like second Godfather less.
I had two gripes of this movie. The first one is it's not The Godfather 2, which is like, if we want to talk about perfect movies, we can just go to the sequel. The second...
Godfather is at like 99.999. Godfather 1 is at like 100. They're very close.
I think it's 100 to 95, 100 to part 2 and 95 to part 1. The other thing that I think is a little shoddy in this movie, believe it or not, is the ADR in this movie. There's a lot of kind of like pretty poor ADR choices where they have to like insert the talking of some actors in certain scenes because they couldn't quite, I don't know, for any reason, they couldn't quite hear them or... For whatever reason, ADR is needed.
People who spoke Italian natively botched their English.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of times that happens. Some of it is pretty like poor in that it doesn't even match like the room tone of certain scenes. Some of it doesn't really match the like voice of the characters or like the voice of the actors. And some of it doesn't really match the lips that often. This is like a few scenes. It's not like the entire movie, but there's a handful there that are noticeable at times that I think are pretty distracting and not the best, not that great. But it's rare to talk about a movie and say my biggest gripe is the ADR.
Yeah.
It's a pretty, like, not to diss sound editors, but it's, you know, not the biggest part of filmmaking. So all this to say, it's still a near-perfect movie.
You know who would definitely argue with you about that?
Brett.
Brett?
Yeah.
Did you kill Brett? What happened?
He's trapped inside the box. But,
no, Brett, to escape. But that's Brett. To say, I mean, also, ADR is a process that has gotten a lot better since the 70s. So, like, it's...
Yeah. I think also, too, it could be, I mean, we watched on an old DVD. They've since done restorations on it. I mean, things like that could have been corrected.
And yeah, there's no saying how it sounded. Yeah.
I said it was near perfect, and y'all are fighting me on this?
Yes.
I'm just
that's
saying.
What the show is. What is.
My take wasn't that bad.
No, I'm not saying
we're
it's
supposed,
wrong.
We're supposed, oh, supposed okay. to discuss.
Yeah, I'm just
fracas.
Oh, I thought y'all were like elements legitimately fracas. Like.
No, I'm just saying like the ADR is a very like, it's a technical thing that could have been resolved in like later restorations of the movie.
It's something that may not have been noticeable in 70s theaters. Like it's something that like,
yeah, I mean, in the context of the time it came out, yeah.
Playing it on a DVD or a Blu-ray.
I don't think it has been resolved because I have a Blu-ray of The Godfather and on my Blu-ray, it's still like,
but is it the new one? Cause he just released like the new,
is it like
it's
the like Coppola called,
it's
one?
It's called like the Coppola Restoration.
Yes, that's the one I have.
Is it the one you have? Okay.
Yeah. First time I watched this was on a 2 VHS set that my dad had. And I didn't notice it then, but I was also young.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'd be interested to go back and take a look at some of those scenes. The first time I watched this was on Netflix in a dorm room on a laptop computer. So less than ideal.
Just the way it was intended.
As Coppola intended.
Yes, absolutely.
Coppola envisioned laptop computers.
It's like when I watched Roma on my 3DS.
Exactly
yes. As Quaron intended.
You watched it on your... I did it on my Wii U.
Oh, yeah?
There you go. I mean, The Godfather, y'all, it's a wonderfully made movie. It is... I mean, we're talking about it now for a reason.
You're just going to leave it there? I mean, we're talking about it now.
If anyone's wondering why we're a little low energy, it is very late for us recording.
I mean...
Yeah, we have to do more of this after.
Yeah, we've all had long days, and there's still more after this we have to do. So if we sound a little bit low energy, just bear with us.
I just don't even want to fight about this movie.
I mean, it's great. My only something that I go back to that I don't really fault the movie for necessarily, but I think it's interesting, especially if we think about Godfather versus Godfather Part 2, which I haven't revisited recently, but probably should. The role of women in this film is something that, like, you know, you always have to take it with a grain of salt based mm-hmm. on when it was made, you know, based on the society that we're trying to accurately portray. I mean, if you look at Sicilian film from a decade before, if you look at a lot of Italian cinema, you know, decades before this film was released, you know,
you think about how the mob operates
and how the mob operates, you know, it's obviously a very restrictive, society that's not particularly conducive to any kind of female freedom or any kind of expression. But I think about Godfather Part 2, and I think some of the best female performances in the trilogy exist in Part 2, especially I'm thinking of Diane Keaton and, you know, really having, you know, an ounce of freedom in that movie to wage over Michael is sticks with me when I think of these two films as, like, a unit in particular. And that's not quite there in Godfather, just because it is an origin story of, you know, Michael and of the male-centered, aspects of the mob, but she's still important enough to, I think.
She still turns a great performance. Not as great as her performance in Part 2, I would say.
And I think that's largely, you know, a story thing as well, and I would have liked to see what the, you know, relationship was and what got on the chopping block and what didn't between the novel and the screenplay mm-hmm. for the film. I think Mario Puzo was...
He wrote the screenplay.
Yeah, he wrote the screenplay. So he had, you know, complete choice over what was in and what wasn't. But that's, if I have to really look and analyze at least my own response to the movie, which is... I'll still stand by a near perfect, if not perfect, film.
Yeah. Which once again, in that screenplay, he is taking a book that is chopped up and split between different eras and different mm-hmm. perspectives, and putting it into a cinematic perspective in a chronological order. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, unfortunately, I feel like probably the book has more female representation throughout mm-hmm. as it does, like, just storytelling wise.
He wrote the book, so he's probably just familiar enough with the story. I don't know how much of a struggle it was to. Cut around the structure of the book.
But
he just knows the story in his head.
Yeah, I'm just saying that, like, you know, when you write a book and mm-hmm. you can, you know, cut it up into whatever order you want like that, when you do put it out chronologically, sometimes, unfortunately, the mm-hmm. places of power for people in the margins end up later in the chronological story.
Yeah. Anyone have anything else to say about The Godfather? No.
No. It's good.
Where's The Godmother?
And that's in Shrek 2. Right there.
You were right.
She needs a hero.
I'm just. I'll just mute myself now.
Okay. Goodbye, Robbie.
Bye.
We're all gonna talk about Schindler's List now.
Bye.
Oh no.
I was saying bye-bye to myself for my timeout.
Gotcha. Let's talk about Schindler's List. Steven Spielberg's Schindler's List. Is it his opus? I don't know. He's still making movies.
Like so a train.
It's no Ready Player One.
That's
well.
It is indeed not Ready Player One. Yes, that is an accurate statement. I do think it's amazing that two of his best movies came out in the same year. He made them at the same time.
What else came out when Ready Player One came out?
The Post.
The Post, actually. This was the second time he did this. Because he made, well, no, I think he did Munich and the term, or he did Munich and War of the Worlds maybe at the same time.
Did he do Catch Me If You Can and The Terminal at the same time?
No,
those are a couple years apart.
Well, they're, yeah, they're like a year or two apart. So close. I think it was like one right after the other, but I don't think they were at the same time. But I appreciate it. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's pretty tough to say this is an opus because there's also Saving Private Ryan.
Saving Private Ryan's really good. And
I mean, you could also
Color
say
Purple.
Color Purple. Well,
Jurassic Park was also made at the same time, yeah, which is a fantastic.
I was gonna say Jurassic Park is up there. Jaws, obviously.
Jaws.
Yeah. E.T. Close Encounters. E.T. Man's made a lot of good movies.
Yeah.
Bridge of Spies.
Some might even say the most good movies.
Made a lot of commercially successful good movies.
Yeah.
But
I've still only watched this movie once. I've not since watching it before this season started. I have not been able to bring myself to watch it again at any point.
It's let me tell you, it's hard. Rewatches for this movie are particularly.
I tell you what, cruel. don't watch it 3 times in 2 weeks like I did.
Yeah. I don't have that kind of time. First of all,
it's a bad idea.
Both this and The Godfather, I watched once before this season. I thought about rewatching all three of these movies. Did not rewatch any of them.
Yeah, we always talk about that, but we never do it.
Yeah.
Why did we give ourselves a show where we have to do homework?
That's a good question.
Also, yes, worth examining.
For the content.
We might have an answer. Stay tuned.
content. But Schindler's List.
Yeah, Schindler's List, I think, it's incredible, I think. It's a very good movie, just as with the other two, both incredible movies. Schindler's List, to me, is the most human, I think, by virtue of what it's about.
Yes.
humanity.
Easily the most empathetic.
I think this is a career great performance for Liam Neeson.
I think, I think Liam Neeson's just astonishing. I think Ralph Fiennes also astonishing.
Not Ben Kingsley's best performance, but not bad.
I was going to say, it's solid performance. To me, he's not necessarily like the standout.
No.
But he is still a standout.
He turns in a great performance. Yeah. Truly, when talking about this, might be my favorite Liam Neeson. This might be my favorite Ralph Fiennes.
It's not Gandhi.
Yeah, I was gonna say the best was yet to come.
Go check out Gandhi if you haven't seen it.
Have you guys heard of Gandhi?
Ben Kingsley, very good in it as Gandhi. When I watch it, I go, "That's Gandhi."
Really? Because I watch and go, "That's Chappie."
Oh no!
I'm very confused. Ben Kingsley was great in Chappie.
Was he in Chappie?
He was Chappie.
He is Chappie.
No, he isn't Chappie. I know Charlton Copley's Chappie. I know that.
No, that's his pen name.
Oh,
that's
no.
That's Ben Kingsley's pen name.
Don't disrespect Charlton Copley like that. He's great. He's fine.
He's great. He's fine.
I like Charlton Copley.
He's good. He's good.
Ben Kingsley playing Chappie.
What? Have you seen Free Fire?
No.
Have you seen District 9?
No.
You haven't seen Chappie, I imagine. Have you seen Elysium?
No.
Have you seen Chappie?
then, yeah, you might not know Charles Copley.
He's in something else.
It's okay. I don't need to know him.
He's a good actor. I like him.
Have you seen Hardcore Henry?
No. Another winner, by the way.
Yes.
Kind of. Hard one to watch. Have you seen Chappie?
No. Wait, is everyone just Googling this?
Yeah, now we're all on his IMDb.
Did you see
Maleficent?
The first one?
Yeah, the first Maleficent.
Yeah.
Ringo the Hollis.
He plays the guy, he plays like the human that she falls in love with that then like cuts her wings off.
Oh, okay.
Did you see the American remake of Old Boy?
No.
Don't.
A Spike Lee joint. Right.
It is a Spike Lee.
Did you see The A-Team? Did you see 2010's The A-Team?
No.
Murdoch. I didn't even know he was in that.
He's Murdoch.
Yeah, apparently. I didn't realize that was him. But
he needs a better agent, is what I'm getting.
I think you just haven't seen it in his movies, because there are a lot of good movies he's in.
Have you seen...
Namely District 9 and Free Fire.
I'll concede to those, but these
not
other
Elysium's
ones...
Elysium's okay.
Nah.
Wait, what is... Sorry.
Chappies.
Maybe we'll talk about this a different...
Not great.
Maybe we'll talk about this at a different time, but there's a movie with him in it called Seal Team, which is an animated movie about seals in like the
But is it also about Seal Team 6?
I can show you the way.
Oh.
I can show you the. I'll just post this to our Twitter on Friday.
Wild. Anyway, back to Schindler's List. I know we've been kind of dancing around the Holocaust.
I'm not going to. I was thinking about singing a song with the lyric dancing around the Holocaust.
Don't do it. Bad idea. But
doing kind of a Billy Idol impression.
It's a very heavy movie, as we've talked about. And my only, I mean, I don't have too many gripes with it.
Yeah.
I think
it's too political.
I just think that we should
just
give
say it, Carter.
All right. Somebody said it.
I think somebody we should give some time to both sides.
Oh,
I think it's
God,
only
please,
fair to
I'm,
tell
now
it
I'm,
from both
sides. I'm going
to
mute you now. No, I think, yeah, I think my. Because it is so, like, it is so kind of almost documentary-esque in, like, showing you the horrors, you know, of the Holocaust.
Yeah, incredibly well-researched.
Yeah, I think it...
Authentic to a fault.
Yeah. Not to a
not
fault.
Not to its
I
own
just think,
fault.
I just think
my...
maybe from, like... and it's, I think, an exceptionally well-paced movie. Like, I don't... I mean, you feel the length, but it's not like bad. You're not like, oh gosh, this is a slog. But I think there are maybe some moments where
it might have been a slog for the people involved.
Exactly.
I'm also back to say I deserved my time out there.
Yes. So I'm where I'm at is I'm like, you can maybe make the argument that they could have tightened up some scenes here and there, to make it like flow a little better. But even then, I'm hesitant to say that like. To like put my foot down too hard on that.
I think,
cause like I said, I think part of it is the experiential sitting with it, kind of dwelling on it, having the time to think about it while you're also watching it, which I think is important. It's also kind of what I think about The Irishman is like, I think the length is a crucial piece of it because you're able to self-reflect as you're watching it. But it's, yeah. So it's like, maybe you can make an argument for that. But even then I'm like, I don't know. Cinematography wise, I love the way the camera moves. I love the lighting. We've talked about there may be some parts where once again, where it's almost like a documentary, you're just getting a, you know, it's not necessarily dynamic cause you're just watching a regular wide shot of something happening.
Of an atrocity.
An atrocity. Yeah. So it's once again, you kind of, because it is designed for a specific purpose, I'm hesitant to like knock it for it. But from a filmmaking perspective, I mean, you can argue whether or not that's, you know, a valid enough choice.
Yeah.
So
I can't.
I'm being very noncommittal on this, but I like the movie. I'm just bringing up some things that may or may not be issues with others that aren't. They're kind of, but not really issues with me.
Yeah. I think I said this in another episode. I know I said this in another episode. I just don't remember which one. We did a lot of batch recording this season. I still, you know, this is a critique that I think is more of a, I would have done this differently perhaps if I were the filmmaker, not I think it's bad. I think we do spend a lot of time with Schindler as he is the main character. I think we could get to know some of the people that he helps a little bit better. Mm-hmm. I understand we have empathy for them because of the situation, because we have this already added cultural information that we know, you know, that of course everyone is an innocent person that did not deserve to be a victim of the Holocaust. Or, you know, anyone who he didn't save wasn't, you know, shouldn't have been a victim of the Holocaust because evil, evil people were doing evil, evil things. That being said, you know, I would like to get to know some of those people that he saves or some of the people that he doesn't get a chance to save a little bit better. Once again, it's just that's not a gripe, or I think that it's bad that it doesn't do that. It's a just... what could have been a blue sky thing. If I were telling this story, I might tell it differently.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I don't have much to, you know, because we can't really talk about what I, you know, I haven't written my, Schindler's List remake spec script or something.
Oh, wait, you know, like, we're talking about Schindler's List. What's the thing I always need to say? You know, that scene where Schindler points out that,
he could have done more.
He could have saved more. It just gets me every time. And that, you know, you have this whole military industrial complex that he's a part of, but also working against. Yeah, I think that's the other thing I saw a lot. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, it's hard to say. It's hard to say when I make a critique like that, that I would make the right choice or that, you know, someone else would execute, that I could execute it or Steven Spielberg could have executed that at the same level that he does with what we got.
He didn't want to do it. He was. There were a lot of other directors that he was like, I don't feel confident enough doing this. Would you do it? And then finally it came down to he couldn't find anyone who he trusted more than himself to do it at the end.
I mean, that's how it is when you have something like this that is so precious.
Yeah, and personal.
Yeah.
Especially to him.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you've got your Star Wars prequels, you should be the one to direct them, George. What Spielberg said to...
I don't know if it's the same.
That's what Spielberg said to George Lucas, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because Spielberg did not want to direct a Star Wars prequel.
Can you imagine if he did, though?
No.
He did direct one scene in one of them.
Really?
Yeah.
The best one.
The Anakin and Obi-Wan fight in Revenge of the Sith was all directed by Steven Spielberg.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's why cool. It's one of the best.
Which is so weird to me that you would think George Lucas would want to direct that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to watch the behind-the-scenes documentary for Episode 3. There's a whole part where he's like, so we have a guest director coming in to direct this sequence. His name's Steven Spielberg. You might have heard of him.
You might have heard of him.
And Steven wants to do this, so we're going to do this. I'm just here to listen.
Yeah, so I really am... really enjoy and love this movie. While I don't watch it a lot for obvious reasons.
I don't watch it a lot either. I just by circumstance, I watched it a lot in a very short time period.
Can I ask, does anyone not like this movie? Is there anyone here that's like, this is not good?
No.
Okay.
So.
I just, no one has to preface their arguments anymore with, I like this movie.
Yeah, that's fair. I forgot what I was going to say.
I just feel like we say that a lot on Best Picture episodes. Oh, I like this movie. It's like, okay, yes.
I like all of them or else they wouldn't have gotten
that. That's not true.
Sometimes there are movies that we don't like that make.
Yeah, The Greatest Showman went a lot farther than I wanted it to for something I didn't like.
Not a fan of RoboCop.
Yeah, you didn't
that like too. RoboCop. Yeah. So sometimes we do need to say it. But I
think it should just be an opt-out program. You should just say if you didn't like it.
What I do
to walk away.
No comment.
No, I'm just saying if you didn't like it, you should say you didn't. We can assume you like it.
Definitely.
If you...
Yeah.
What I'm impressed by is going off of what I think Carter's point originally was, is that this movie is so well researched and thought and done with such careful detail that everything is just so impactful and empathetic and just so many like human emotions that you feel from it. Just because you really relate to the character or, you know, respond to them at the very, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And, it's just shot really well. The music's so good in it. The performances are also really great. I love the choice of making it in black and white just to kind of, respond from all the footage and the documentary footage they had from it to kind of draw parallels and through the images and stuff. I like the creative choice of having the girl with the red coat and having her the only color in the movie, which I don't know. I guess we've talked about that a little bit, but not like the choice of it, which I think is like pretty innovative. And I think it like is executed very well and gets the exact emotion that he's going for. And it's just a really beautiful and well done movie that is like it's really hard just to not like emotionally respond to it. So
yeah,
I don't know if I have many qualms with it other than this isn't even a qualm. It's just hard to watch a lot of the time. It's like, it's rare that I really want to put this movie in because I have to experience it again.
This by far has to be one of the best movies ever made that I don't ever look forward to watching.
Yeah,
I agree. When I do, I'm happy, you know, hours later, I suppose, that I have. But
it's a very satisfying cry at the end.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's
you're crying so much already, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, catharsis written all over this movie. And, you know... I would expect nothing less. And, you know, that's what this movie kind of demands of its audience. And it's a very demanding movie. And, you know, and it can be, I think, just because of the craft that goes into it, you know, not even beginning to touch the subject material at all. But yeah, I have nothing else to add other than, you know, the music I think is the icing on the cake of this mm-hmm. really, you know, spectacular movie. I mean, it's like Perlman, the entire string section, all of the themes. I'm so glad that it made its way, to, you know, this far and it didn't get like voted off before the score episode, because, you know, it's such a rich environment that complements, you know, fantastic film and it's made so well. But yeah, that's all I got. Schindler's List.
Cool. Yeah.
All right.
Are we ready? I think that means it's time to do our voting.
Ready for our voting? Our rankings?
Yeah.
To find the winner.
I will say I didn't rank these beforehand because I wanted to hear the arguments that everyone made. Uh-huh. So I don't want to start tonight.
Okay. Okay. So what are we? How are we doing this? Am I saying?
Start with three. We've got to go with our threes.
Okay. So my number three is Birdman. And to me, it's just like I said, it personally has the least emotional resonance for me, but it's still an astounding movie. All three of these movies are just massive achievements of filmmaking. So I don't want to undercut it too much, but yeah, personally of these three, it is my least favorite.
Birdman was my number three as well. Similar reasons.
I also gave it to Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance at number three.
Oh, is that why you're shaking your head? Is it in, say the whole name?
Yes, oh, okay. That is exactly why I'm shaking my head at both of you.
I'm sorry. Slip my mind.
Not for similar reasons, because I do actually find a lot of resonance in the movie. I just think that, in all honesty, I just think that the other two are just so complete that unfortunately I just have to rank it the third. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit closer than I thought it was going to be, but yeah, I would still have to put it at the bottom.
Robbie?
I also have Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance at our third. And I think this is mostly after hearing everybody's arguments, after talking about it, this hasn't had time to age as much as.
That's true.
We haven't seen cultural significance of this.
We've only had 5 or 6 years.
Play later, out. Yeah. And even in the 5 or 6 years since it came out, it feels like it doesn't have the lasting cultural significance that these other two films do. I could be proven wrong. We could, you know, see a renaissance of Birdman critique coming anytime.
Yeah. But I will say it's interesting that I think this movie is at least still talked about versus Inarritu's more recent movie, The Revenant.
Yes.
Which I feel like nobody talks about.
Evaporated.
Yeah,
thin
evaporated.
Air.
Out of, and it's, I personally wasn't even that big of a fan of The Revenant anyway.
I like The Revenant.
But
I enjoyed it.
I could stand to rewatch it. I've only seen it once.
I actually have not seen The Revenant. Well, I have a Blu-ray.
I was going to say, I got the 4K Blu-ray for Christmas because I think it was in the $5 bin. Mm-hmm. my parents were picking up some 4K Blu-rays for Christmas.
Someone gave me the Blu-ray. I have it. I just didn't get to watch it.
Good book. Good movie. I mean, Leo got his Oscar.
Here's my hot take about The Revenant. I don't think Leo deserved the Oscar. I don't think it was his best performance. I don't think he was the best performance that year. I think Michael Fassbender's Steve Jobs was the best performance that year. And I think Leo did a better job in Wolf of Wall Street a couple years before.
I agree with that.
But that's where we are. We're not talking about
The Revenant.
The Revenant. But is it my turn? Has everyone said it? Yeah, everyone said it. But
yeah.
My number two is Schindler's List. Like we said, and I guess... Yeah, I guess we'll just do number twos. My number two is Schindler's List. These last two movies, like I said, are two very complete and incredible films. And it's just two very different movies. And for me, The Godfather just kind of hits a little bit more, not harder. Schindler's List certainly... Harder. Schindler's List certainly hits harder, but...
Yes.
Yeah, I think because The Godfather is a more enjoyable experience, I maybe like it a little more. It's not quite as down. Still very good, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My number two pick is Schindler's List as well. I mean, enjoyment factors in a lot. I will say that just because we've gone through every other criteria to distinguish these two films, and you know, something I'm going to be rewatching The Godfather a whole lot more for the rest of my life, hopefully, than Schindler's List. Although Schindler's List, you know, has plenty of import and will, you know, has its time and place. But trying to think. Yeah, I mean, The Godfather has, everything's tied up and packaged, I think, maybe just a little more seamlessly as well. And it stands out in my mind a little bit more as like, okay, we got like the 0.001 amount of perfection, cleaned and put together just a little bit more than maybe what was presented in, you know, the 99% of perfection that Schindler's List offers. Mm-hmm. So that is my roundabout justification. But yeah, Schindler's List is number two for me.
I also have Schindler's List number two.
Are we all going to have the same list?
Mine is not so much an enjoyment based in terms of why I'm sliding it to the number two spot. It's more because I think that, and it's, I don't even want to call it like a problem with Schindler's List, but I do think that one thing that I love about The Godfather that does not exist in Schindler's List is the kind of variance and ebb and flow of scenes. And I think scenes are given time to kind of rest and then time to crescendo and create these big important moments and these kind of explosive scenes and kind of vary in emotion that you feel, and kind of you just really like take in so much stuff in that movie. Whereas like with Schindler's List, I just find that it's
all of those things still happen.
I find a lot of Schindler's List to be just punishing for like 3 hours. And I'm not saying punishment is bad, but I don't think there's a lot of variance. Like, I don't think there's a lot of time to be quiet or not the time to like kind of grow with the characters and find some like humor, find some stuff, which again, I'm not criticizing because it's obviously the Holocaust. So of course you can't do that. But I think it's something that I hold dearly to The Godfather, and I am widely impressive that they can mix so much like stuff with the gang violence and the trauma of like their marriages and stuff like that with a lot of levity and stuff that I
am surprised at the amount of levity that they are able to fit into Schindler's List. Which I mean, they have to have some jokes where they can.
It's not Jojo Rabbit, but yeah.
Correct. It's not Jojo Rabbit.
I mean, I already laughed and said that we all have the same list. My reasons here for why Schindler's List does not top out The Godfather here, I think it's already easy to say. We're getting into the margins here of like why one perfect film is better than a nearly perfect film, you know. Mm-hmm. And that is to say that just I think so much of my emotion with Schindler's List is tied into the real life events, and it is hard to separate, you know, am I, because it is so much like a documentary, am I upset because I really care about these characters, or am I upset because these atrocities actually happened? And whereas in a pretty much fabricated story, I'm sure there's lots of truth and lots of real life that The Godfather pulls from, but that I can care so deeply about these characters and these stories really is a testament to how well written it is and how well performed it is. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, both of these have images that will stick out forever in my mind.
Yeah.
When it comes down to it, there's probably a few more images from The Godfather that are a complete picture of perfect filmmaking in general.
Are you just one perfect shot now?
Maybe. I'm trying not to be, you know, every film bro on Twitter, but I mean, it's just hard to say that like The Godfather isn't a perfect film, because it is. It's, you know, the gripes that we have are in that the technology for ADR wasn't at the level that we would like it to be at the time. You know, there's,
yeah.
It's hard to say that. I don't want to say it sound bad by saying that Schindler's List got second place.
I don't think anyone here is saying that.
Yeah.
But there we have it.
Yeah. I don't want to dwell on it too much longer.
So
that's real easy to do the math here.
Yeah. Godfather is our winner. Season 9 winner. Friends for Coppola's The Godfather. Right. Near perfect film. Or perfect film, depending on how you want to look at it. Yeah, it's great.
Congratulations, Francis Ford Coppola.
Coppola.
I know you were listening.
I know you were like so worried that about The Godfather. Like it wasn't already wildly critically acclaimed and beloved by millions. So
it's truly the genius of it rests in the fact that it can be enjoyed on a Sunday afternoon if it's playing on TNT mm-hmm. or whoever has the rights to it right now, and still be enjoyed as a high class piece of art.
Yeah,
it's the Godfather of movies.
It is.
You're right. Yeah. He's got it. This man's got it.
This man.
So stay tuned for our bonus episode next week. And then our prologue episode, I guess you can call it.
It'll be our film announcement for season.
Yeah, for season 10. So we'll have those in the next 2 weeks, and then we'll be starting season 10 after that. So you can find me.
You do want to check out both of those. I think we're going to have a lot of fun discussion and some big announcements.
There are some big announcements on both of those. Check those out. You can find me on Twitter at CA Spilliards, like Spill Some Yardananas, and on Letterboxd at CA Spilliards, cross-platform. And Byte, become one of my 10,000 followers.
This isn't true. There's not 10,000 people on Byte.
I know. I'm recommending this week.
You're recommending this week?
No, I'm not recommending. This week was just okay, actually.
You had a bad day?
Last week I had a real bad day.
Because you had a bad day.
Yeah, I'm not going to steal Shannon's because I think I know what she's... No?
Hold up. I haven't even logged it yet.
Okay.
Oh.
I'm still thinking of my pun.
Okay.
But it's free real estate.
All right. I'm going to go with...
It's free real estate.
You know, I'm going to go with the other movie I saw today. The Lodge. A new horror movie that won't be in theaters much longer. I barely caught it now. From Veronica Franz and Severin.
You better
Fiala.
Hope it's still out this weekend, Kurt.
Yeah.
Because this comes out Friday. So.
Yeah. I liked it.
You sound like you don't like it.
No. I found it to be, it's very like off-putting, the whole movie. And it's like an excellent justification for not having kids. If you watch that movie, it makes a strong case against having kids. It's a good movie. It's an interesting, cause it's like the movie takes place at Christmas time. So it is kind of a Christmas movie. Like Christmas is a big part of it, but it's also like very not about Christmas. and similar to Hereditary in that you have these kind of real world horrors in it, that are being reflected and then kind of exaggerated with this horror lens. So similar to Hereditary, I think a lot of people might either say it's ripping off Hereditary or like Hereditary Light or copying it. I don't think that's the case. I think it's just kind of using this similar practice of taking like a real world horror or real world anxiety and then kind of translating that through this like phantasmagorical lens. But I liked it. It had some excellent performances from Riley Kilo and Richard Armitage and the kid from It. What's his name? Jaden Martell. He's also in Knives Out. He's good too. So
I couldn't remember if this was. I knew this was the one with a kid from It, but it's not the one with Finn Wolfhard and the girl from.
No, that's Florida Project. That's the turn or the turning.
The turning.
That's the turning of the screw. That's apparently doesn't have an ending. It's apparently the worst movie, like one of the worst movies ever made.
Nice.
I did not see it.
Shout out.
Shout out to the turning.
Hey, I like those kids.
I like them too.
Fine.
Shannon, are you ready to go?
Yes.
Don't bring your child slander here, Phoenix.
Phoenix, you would like La Lodge because you'd be like, yeah, fuck those kids.
Hell yeah. I'm down.
Okay. Hello, everyone. You can find me on Letterboxd at ZedsDead5 or Twitter at Wide and Nerdy, W-E-I-D and Nerdy. This week, I'm recommending something I saw less than, 2.5 hours ago? And it is Sally Potter's, what year did it come out? 1992 film Orlando, based on the novel by, Virginia Woolf.
Yeah.
It's
Who's Afraid of Her?
Who's Afraid of Her? Billy Zane. Billy Zane is very frightened. It's weird and wonderful, and I mean, completely runs with Sally Potter's running theme of discussing gender and gender flexibility throughout
quirky film.
The fabric of time. I mean, in a lot of ways, I think you can argue that, you know, Fleabag wouldn't exist without this movie. Timothée Chalamet would not exist without this movie.
I think he could exist.
I like
his whole thing about being this, you know.
I just think it's hilariously tragic that Billy Zane has long, beautiful, flowing hair in this movie, and then if you look at him now, he's bald. It's very sad.
Oh, that is very sad. I hope it wasn't a wig. I hope it was real. But it's fantastic. It's about a nobleman named Orlando who changes and modifies his essence throughout time incarnate. And it's quirky. It's interesting. It's got some good writing, great costume design. And I think it really paves the way for a lot of the things that we take for granted in modern period adaptations, like The Favorite, like hopefully Emma. A lot of...
We'll find out soon.
Yes. A lot of films that are taking some risks in a genre that...
Oh, wow. Billy Zane's hair in this is...
Yeah, I look at Billy Zane now.
I
too.
Also looked.
It's changed quite a lot, but yeah, Orlando, it's great. And then if you also have the chance to see the Gold Diggers, her prelude to the work, they're best watched when seen together, I believe. But
yes,
yeah.
I'm actually very glad that we watched the Gold Diggers before this.
Before, yeah, it's it's an interesting piece, very experimental. But yeah, those are the takes for this week.
You can find me at BombSPhoenix on Twitter. You can find me at BombSPhoenix on Letterboxd as well. Still doing my lists. I don't remember what my last one... Oh, I think my last one was like stand-up specials, actually. So kind of
a different thing.
Yeah, kind of a different sort of list-going thing. But they have stand-up specials on Letterboxd. So my last list was my top 10 Netflix specials. So follow me there, and you can see my... more of my list coming up. I haven't done this week's yet, but we'll see what it is. My recommendation is going to be The Godfather Part 2. Sorry, guys.
Sure. It's a good movie.
Okay. Yeah, it's good. It's if you like the winner of this season, you'll love The Godfather Part 2 because it's this movie again, but better.
I assume if you've seen The Godfather, you've probably then watched the rest of the trilogy.
Or maybe you haven't. No. Maybe you've That'd only seen so... the second and the third Godfather, but never the first.
What a
That
trip.
Would be wild.
That'd be wild. Imagine that.
I'd love that. I'd love to meet that person.
Yep.
Yeah. Go see Godfather Part 2.
Yep. All right. You can follow me on Twitter and TikTok at Robbie DeShazer. Join my 1,200 followers on TikTok.
Jesus. Blowing up.
Yeah. It's good.
More than I have on any other social media. Thank you to everyone who came out last Saturday as we're recording this to see It's Your Funeral at Cold Town Theater. I am pleased to announce that we have an April 11th date that we got. So we will be doing that show again. So please go buy tickets to that. It's at Cold Town Theater. I'll probably be posting about it on my Twitter as that starts coming up. Other than that, my recommendation, I'm going to go with a weird recommendation today as it isn't a movie or a book or a TV show or anything like that. It is an experience that you can only have at a couple places in the world at this point. But if you are fortunate enough to be within driving distance of a Void VR experience, This is while I was at Disney World, I got the chance to go do the Void VR Star Wars Secrets of the Empire. This is a crazy thing. People have talked about this before, I'm sure, but like, if you can do it, like, it's totally worth the price to go do it.
What is it?
It's a full, like, if you can imagine laser tag mixed with VR. Oh. So you are in like an escape room or something. It's experiential. You've got a VR visor with a haptic like vest on. So when stormtroopers shoot at you and you get hit, you can feel it. But also you're moving through like a room that is actually pretty tiny, and they're convincing you that you're walking forward, but you're actually walking like in a circle. There's some real crazy shit going on, but everything is real. If you're holding a blaster, you're holding a real blaster. There's the point where they tell you to sit down and there's a real seat underneath you. It's a very cool augmented virtual reality experience.
That is cool.
Which has a in canon Star Wars story. Featuring some of your favorite characters from Rogue One.
I feel like you probably look hilarious if someone's like watching you like stumble around as a room with them. Yeah,
if you watch it, you can watch footage of people doing it. But also, like, it's really cool to have like an in-canon Star Wars experience that you can only have at like 30 locations in the U.S.
Yeah.
What's the
nearest one to here?
Plano, Texas.
Oh, hell yeah.
So we could make a trek to Plano to do it. I would gladly do it again. But if Star Wars isn't your thing, go check out The Void. They don't need my promotion, but they've got several other like stories. They've got a Ghostbusters one. They've got like an original horror story. Like, check them out. They're really cool. The owner also does another thing called EverQuest, which is like real life LARPing, but in Utah with like a huge immersive theme park. Like, this guy is insane and kind of cool, and I want them to keep doing stuff, especially because it's like independent of a big conglomerate. So it's sure. cool to see independent cool. creators doing really cool immersive stuff that means you don't have to have a Disney budget to do it.
We love innovative storytelling.
Yeah.
Wait, it's not Disney, but it's Star Wars?
So they license stores. So they have a partnership with Disney that they have locations at outside of their theme parks, like in their like shopping areas. So they've done a Star Wars, and they've done a Ralph Breaks the Internet one, but they've also done Ghostbusters, which is Sony. They're working with other studios to develop stuff. So like, just kind of like how PlayStation works with all sorts of studios to do licensed content.
Right.
So.
Cool.
Yeah. I highly recommend it. Go check them out. That's my recommendation, I guess, but specifically Star Wars Secrets of the Empire.
So yep, that's it. That's season 9, in the bag, and stay tuned for those very important bonus episodes. You're not going to miss it. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
You can say
bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. Thank you for listening to season 9 of Film Fracas. We will be back very soon. As always, you can follow the show on Facebook and Twitter at Film Fracas. Go follow us there. Support the show by going to our Teespring and buying our merch while we still have it available. Other than that, thank you so much for listening. We can't wait for you to hear our next episode. 5208 Media.